So the book of Judges last week, remember that cycle that they were in? Just over and over again. Remember 13 times in the book of Judges, 14 different judges that we saw come through. And the time that happened, you know, 332 years of that, just over and over and over again. And you know how when you get up and say something and then you're like, oh, you don't think of all the things you said, you think of all the things you missed to say. Well, one of them that I wanted to say was just reflecting on that 332 years, if we compare that to today. So it's 2022, my. And if we go back, what's 332 years ago? You know, 1690. You know, you think about the United States as a country. What was going on in 1690 in the United States? You know, before Declaration of Independence, you know, 80 years before that. You know what was going on in 1690? The Salem witch trials were going on. It just, you know, like, wow, that's such a long time ago. And you can think about, you know, the duration in time. You can also think about, you know, just the progress that we've made over that period of time. Just let's say in a good way. I know there's been plenty of, you know, bad progress. but just, that's a lot of time. That's a lot of time. And can you imagine being stuck in that cycle that Israel was stuck in for that length of time? Let's say from 1690 until 2022, being stuck in this cycle over and over and over again, where they're blessed, and then like, wow, look at everything we can do, and they forget about God, and then God delivers them into some oppression, and then they call out to God, God, please help us, you know, deliver us from this, and then he sends a judge, and and then they have freedom, and then they, you know, get caught up in themselves again, just over and over and over again. You know, somewhat in the United States, we've experienced some of that. You know, we've had some good times, and now we have some difficult times. And so, like, is this going to be a cycle for us? I don't know. How many cycles is it going to be before the trumpet sounds? I don't know. But it's been an interesting time. But it seemed like last week, we kind of left on a difficult, you know, it's kind of a difficult book. Because when you remember chapters 1 through 2 are just the summary of the book of Judges. And then 3 through 16, that was the main judges. You know, all of them that are there. All 13 of them, and then 17 through 21, just those five chapters, it's just how bad things get, just how God, what happens when God is rejected? What happens to the country? What happens to it? And what do you see? Just the huge moral depravity, just the morals going down, people don't care, and just the total lack of human life, especially in those last five chapters. But I'm so thankful that where sin abounds, grace does much more abound. So like last week, kind of, especially those last couple of chapters, I don't know if you've read those recently, but it's like, ugh, you know, why'd you include those kind of stories in there? You know, we need to hear that, because we need to hear it. We need to be reminded of what the consequence, when you get involved in sin, when you turn your back on God, what happens? Your morals are just forgotten, and how were people living then? Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And that's what was going on. So, with all that was going on, but where the grace does much more abound, that's where the book of Ruth comes in. You say, where is God in the book of Judges? He's right here, right in the book of Ruth. And it fits right in the time of the Judges. I'm so thankful for that. Just the, hey, we need some help. You know, sometimes it's like so dark around us. You know, God, where are you? He's right here. He's right here working. Where a whole nation is caught up in this cycle of sin again and again and again, what's God doing? God's preparing a woman in a heathen land on the other side of the river, preparing her for his use. I'm so thankful for that and everything that God was able to do through her. So, the book of Ruth, I believe it was written by Samuel. I've seen plenty of evidence for that. I'm sure you get somebody to argue differently. Let's see. Remember this. So the theme, redemption. Redemption is the theme for the book of Ruth. I have like just a couple of slides, not a long book. And here's the basic outline. You know, chapter one, Ruth follows Naomi. Ruth follows Naomi. You know, she's got everything that happens there in Moab, but she's like, nope, I'm following you home. And then chapter 2, Ruth serves Naomi. She chooses to leave Moab, leaves her home, and follows Naomi back to Bethlehem. And then chapter 3, Boaz refuses Ruth, you know, because you know, he was a kinsman. You know, I'm taking a little bit of liberty here, but I don't think too much. How many of you have read the book of Ruth? Hopefully everybody has read the book of Ruth. So it's a story we're all very familiar with. So just kind of reiterating a couple of known things here. Boaz, he wanted to, but he didn't have the legal prerogative to marry her at that time. There's somebody else closer. So we got to just be careful with that. And then chapter 4, Boaz redeems Ruth. He gets that situation all taken care of, and then he redeems Ruth in chapter number 4. So this morning, just want to kind of, and that's really the really high level, and normally we'll go a bit deeper, but with Ruth being just 4 chapters long, you know, we can go through it a little bit more thorough. So that's what I'm going to do my best with this morning. So so if you have your Bibles, please be open to Ruth chapter 1. Let's see. So this is a family living during the time of the judges. Let's just look at verse number 1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his 2 sons. Now we see in the beginning here that this is taking place during the time of the judges. I had some things that I read, you know, kind of place their best guess on when, because, you know, it's 332 years, when the book of Ruth could have taken place in that time. That, you know, we see that they fled to Moab, so there was at least decent time going on in Moab. But what I could see was, I think it was like 1160 to 1100, maybe somewhere in there. It's possible Ruth was a contemporary of Gideon. But it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. We don't have any concrete evidence either way. We do see David mentioned in the book. I put that as one of the key verses in chapter 4. We do see David mentioned, so it's possible, you know, that Samuel wrote it. So, you know, we don't see Solomon mentioned. We don't see Saul mentioned. You know, Samuel was a contemporary of David. So it's quite possible that it took place, you know, toward the latter end of the judges, possibly during Gideon. But in essence, it really doesn't matter where it is. So I just threw a couple dates on there with the little, what's that symbol called? I forget. Approximation. Somewhere around here it was written. So this is the time when every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And here Elimelech is a great example of that. So what's going on? There's a famine in the land. Now a famine is something that God brings upon the land for a time of judgment. And what happens? Elimelech sees this. I'm going to say Elkanah about 1,000 times. So if I say Elkanah, put Elimelech in there. Because you know a couple of those names, you just get mixed up. So I'm going to try. Elimelech, okay? So Elimelech sees what's going on, and what does he want to do? He wants to help take care of his family. So what is right in his own eyes? What does he see that's right in his own eyes? I need to take my family and go over to Moab. It's more prosperous over there. All right, everybody, let's go over there. Now, Elimelech leaves during the time of famine. He's doing what he thinks is right, and he goes to Moab. He does a couple of things. He makes a couple of mistakes. One of his mistakes is Elimelech's choice was based on economics alone. On economics alone. Things are bad here in Israel. I can't provide for my family. There's a famine in the land. It's good over there. I'm going to go over there. Just like a straight numbers calculation. It's good over there. The wages are good over there. Food is plentiful over there. We're going over there. I know some people, we've got some people moving, you know, especially, you know, maybe, Chris, we can understand. There's a thing going on in the United States now. It's kind of slowing down, but it's called the Great Resignation. Maybe you've heard about it, maybe you haven't. Roger, have you heard about it? Oh, yeah. People are changing jobs like crazy. You know, the job numbers come out. And it's like, wow, all these people got a job. Well, so many of those people are people who quit their job and they found a better job, you know, 10, 20% higher, especially with this working remotely and all that. Like, there's people, like Mr. Lee, he mentioned about his son and his bought a house out in California and his mortgage and all that. And I'm like, and he has a big mortgage. Like, whew. His house was like over $1 million to buy his house. And it probably wasn't even that extravagant. It's just how expensive things are. So it's like, the salaries over in California are real high. But like, hey, if I can work for a company out of California and live in, you know, let's say around here or someplace in the Midwest, and on a much more reasonable or cost of living area, and I can do pretty well. You know, where my disposable income is normally, let's say, 10%. Well, now it could be like 80% or greater. Like, you know, do great. Why not? Why not change that? But let's be careful when you make a move like that, when you make a decision like that, that it's not just based on economics alone. Because it's like, hey, I can make that much over there. I can provide so much more if I go over there. It's very important that we don't make decisions based on economics alone. Another mistake Elimelech made, his choice was his Elimelech's choice disregarded recent history. Disregarded recent history. Just think about Moab. Remember, where did Moab come from? Do you think about the roots where Moab came from? It's back to Genesis chapter 19. Remember, let's turn there real quick. Got some time. I don't know how long this is going to take. So we'll jump in a little bit here and there. But Genesis chapter 19, let's see, verses 37 and 38 toward the end of the book. This is Lot. Remember, Lot had fled after Sodom and Gomorrah, and he's up in the mountains with his two daughters. He lost his wife. She got a little salty on him. Verse 38, and the younger, she also bare a son. Oh, wait, 37, I'm sorry. And the firstborn bare a son and called his name Moab. The same is the father of the Moabites unto this day. And the younger, she also bare a son and called his name Benami. The same is the father of the children of Ammon unto this day. So Lot has this ancestral relationship with his two daughters. And what comes out of that? The nations of Moab and the nations of Ammon. From that, that's one of those uncomfortable passages. But that's where they came from. They were bred out of sin, just sin, straight up sin. but remember also when the children of Israel were coming up out of Egypt. Remember Balaam and Balak and all that, and around that was the children of Moab. And remember Balak wanted Balaam to curse God's people. And, you know, the whole donkey thing and all that, that's a good story, you know. I like that one, you know. and Balaam, he did not curse God's people. God told him to bless, and he ended up blessing the Israelites. But what did he end up doing? He ended up showing Balak, this is what you do. You get your women to flirt with their men. And then you're able to turn their hearts away. And then, like, in a chapter or two after that, what happens? There's a plague that comes through, and 24,000 of the Israelites are killed through that plague. So God warns Israel, don't mess with Moab. Stay away from them. Don't go over there. That is a mess. Stay away from them. So Elimelech's choice was based on economics alone. He disregarded recent history, and Elimelech's choice was devoid of counsel. Devoid of counsel. You know, he should have known better. He should have known better. Did you ever get into something and be like, I'm not sure if this is a good idea. This might be a bad decision. But sometimes you just go into it anyways. One thing he did is he looked outward for the solution. Like maybe the solution's out there somewhere. What should he have done? He should have looked inward and he should have looked upward for help. What did he do? He looked over to the east. We're going over to Moab. We're going over there. So he should have known better. I'm guessing we see how long they were there, but I bet you Elimelech thought he was the exception to the rule. Yeah, it's bad over there. They worship false gods, but I can take care of myself. I can take care of my family. I can protect them for what's going on. I'll build that hedge about them. And then what happens when he gets there? He dies when he gets there, and he can't be that buffer. You know, I'm sure that was unexpected to him, and it's like that buffer is gone. He could no longer protect his family from the sin that was around them. And last, the fourth mistake, Elimelech's choice was with unwise justification. Now, we don't see this, but you can almost kind of read through in there. We're just going to go for a little while. we'll just go to Moab until things improve over here. You know, things are bad in Bethlehem. As I skipped out on a couple of names that on your sheet there. We have some. I wrote down some meanings of some of the names. You know, I had the name for Elimelech. What was his name? My God is King. Naomi. Hopefully you know what Naomi is. Naomi means pleasant. Pleasant. You know, I think back then people named their children a little bit maybe more meaningful than what we name, right? What we name our kids. But I'm looking at my wife, not looking at the Williams here. They're expecting next month, right? Or sooner, right?
Hopefully today.
Yeah, today, this afternoon. So, you know, it's like, you know, what sounds nice and so many things, but back then, like, I want my child to grow up with this, you know, with this meaning behind their name. What was the other one? Just Bethlehem. You know what Bethlehem means? House of bread. House of bread. This is a place where, you know, I can almost imagine like our Midwest, you know, the bread basket, you know, of the world that was called. There's so much, you know, grain and wheat and flour comes out of there. But here in Bethlehem, it's not the house of bread. There's a time of famine. The fields are not providing for the people around there. Hey, there's a problem here. What am I going to do about this? We'll just go over there for a little while until this is all taken care of. So just a couple of the names, and then we'll see Mara. I kind of left an H on Mara. I know here in Ruth, it doesn't have an H. There's a few other places in the Bible or it has an H, so I was going to go back and take that off, and I missed that. So please give me a little grace on that one. So sorry about that. So, Elimelech's choice was with unwise justification. But as we see here, well, let's just read a couple verses. Let's read verse number 2. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech's, Naomi's husband died, and she was left and her two sons. Now, we don't know how long after they entered Moab that this happened. Actually, let me jump ahead. I got a couple of maps. This is one of the older ones that we had, and I just kind of blew it up. So Bethlehem is right about here, not very far from Jerusalem, and Moab is down over here on the other side of the Dead Sea. I have another one where it's kind of labeled. So here's Bethlehem here, and Moab is down over here. So the distance from here to there, it's about 50 miles, about 50 miles. So what's about 50 miles from here, from our church? That's a little bit further. It's like 70. Syracuse is, you know, maybe even a little bit further. Canandaigua is about 50 miles from here. Now, you think about walking to Canandaigua, you know. That's not, you know, walking home. You know, I remember I told my wife not that long ago, was driving home from college. So how long ago this was? No, it wasn't that long ago. It was like a couple years ago. Man, time, boy, does time fly. Woo. And my car died. I had just had the fuel pump replaced. This is back when I had the Chevy Blazer. I think it was in like a 92 Chevy Blazer, a 91. Woo. Anyways, I just died. It was pretty much right at Ridge and Redmond. Right about there. Back before we had really these, okay? So I walked across the street. There was a business, the phone. I called everybody I could think of. Nobody was answering. I'm like, okay, I'm just walking home. Of course, it was raining, and so I got my backpack. I was not in good shape at the time. Walked. Took forever to get home. I don't know how far that was, about 5-6 miles, you know, maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours to get home. And then, I don't know, some family members got home, and they're like, was that your car? You know, why didn't you? And my sisters were at work. And they're like, why didn't you call us? And I said, what? But boy, do we take things for granted. Just moving. 50 miles, packs up his family and heads on out to the land of Moab. We don't know how long after they got there that Elimelech died. And then we see, verse number 3. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. So Mahlon married Ruth, and Chilion married Orpah. We'll see that later in the book. Here it just mentions they took wives. But do you see the decision that these sons made as soon as their father died? Probably the worst decision they could have made. They married Moabitish women. They should not have done that. They should not have done that. They shouldn't have even been there. And then they should not have married. You'd be like, well, look what happens. You know, Ruth, and then, you know, she comes in the line of David and Jesus. And, well, the end doesn't justify the means. That should not have happened. And you think about that. You know, it's like the true measure of leadership is what your kids do when you're not there. You know, maybe you get a report. You're like, all right. You know, your kid, and I have to pick up, you know, kids from Sunday school classes and nursery, like, hey, how was so-and-so? Were they okay today? And you know, get a report. Oh, you know, Julia was horrible. I'm like, what? She never does that when I'm there. Well, of course she doesn't do that when I'm there. It's like, how do your kids behave when you're not there? That's a true measure of leadership. So, and then not long later, let's keep reading. Let's read verse number 5. Oh, well, in the end of verse number 4, and they dwelt there about 10 years. 10 years is about the time that they're in Ruth. So really the time frame of the book, right about 10 years. Maybe a little bit more than that, not too much. But right about 10 years, the duration of the book of Ruth. Verse number 5, when Mahlon and Chilion died, also both of them. Wow, imagine that. I don't know. We don't know what they died of. Was this some kind of genetic disorder on the father's side? And we don't know. But they both, could you imagine Naomi at this time? I couldn't imagine losing your husband and being in a strange land, and then losing your two sons. My. I don't even like being sick when I'm not home. But, you know, could you imagine losing your husband, your two sons, you're in a strange land. God, what are you doing to me? What's going on? Imagine how somebody who used to be known as pleasant, and what can happen to somebody like that. So Mahlon and Chilion died, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. So about this time, I can only imagine that Naomi's becoming very bitter for what's going on. So guys, look at verse number 6. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. So she's hearing about back in Israel, hey, Bethlehem, the house of bread is becoming the house of bread again. God is blessing. Hey, I'm going to go back home. I'm going to go back home. That's enough of this. I bet she's regretting the decision. This was a bad decision. Never should have come here. This was a mistake. Boy. And what does Naomi tell the girls to do? She tells Ruth and Orpah, stay here. Stay here. They actually follow her along the way. Look what in verse number 8. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, go, return each to your mother's houses. The Lord deal kindly with you. Hey, the Lord deal kindly with you. He hasn't dealt kindly with me, but deal kindly with you. He's been tough to me, as ye have dealt with the dead and with me. I believe Naomi was a very good woman. And I believe Orpah and Ruth saw something in Naomi that made them, imagine these two women wanting to follow Naomi into a strange land, willing to leave their families back in Moab, leave everything that they had and follow this woman that they've known for less than 10 years and head back into a strange land. Yeah, they were willing to do that, leave everything behind. This people didn't move around a whole lot back then like we do today. People were, you know, didn't move much out of their cities, and they're willing to leave their whole country, their whole nation, and head on out. It tells you something about Naomi's the character of her that they had learned about through those about 10 years. But Naomi says, hey, stay here. Your best opportunity is right here. Your best opportunity is to stay here in Moab. What's her solution? She says, hey, if I got married today and I had a son, what are you going to do? Wait for that son to grow and then marry him? That's Naomi's best solution. You know, that's not going to work out, ladies. Just stay here. You know, Elimelech thought his best opportunity was in Moab. That's where I can provide for my family best, over there, over where the grain is growing and where things are happening. I'm going to go over there. But he was wrong. He should have stayed right where he was. But thankfully, Ruth chooses the God of Israel. Look at verse number 14. And they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. That's a good word, clave. You can see that, I think it's in Genesis chapter 2. where a husband and wife, you know, the cleaving between a husband and wife. It's almost that same kind of relationship. Ruth just claved to her mother-in-law, loved her so much, wanted to be with her and help her. Look what she says in verse 15. And she said, "Behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law." Like, go home, Ruth. Go with Orpah. Go with her. Verse 16. And Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go." This is kind of like where she, let's say in the New Testament terms, gets saved. This is where she makes the God of Israel her God. And "For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." Wow, that's a determined young lady right there. There is no moving her. "I'm going with you until I die, or until you die. We are together. I'm in this." And when you meet with somebody like that, there's no persuading them. And I like at the end of verse number 18, "Then she left speaking unto her." Naomi's like, okay, that's done. Now they're just about leaving Moab. I wonder, you know, that's a long journey home, 50 miles. How long would it take by foot? You know, if you got all your stuff, a couple of days. Let's say, you know, 5 days. You know, if you're going 10 miles a day, you know, all depends. Conditions, weather, sandstorm arises, who knows how hot it is, how dry it is. I wonder, did they not talk for 5 days coming back? It says they left speaking, then she left speaking unto her. I'm thinking no. I'm thinking they talked eventually, but I think there was a period of quiet where I'm like, okay, this is what it is. And then, you know, just, I mean, come on, ladies. Got a lot of ladies in here. Could you go 5 days without talking? It's just you and her, and you're headed off. I mean, no, you got to have that. That's just mankind, you know, especially maybe womankind. You know, got to speak. You know, some guys, we can be alone for a while. I can't do it for that long. I need somebody there. But she needed that help. So then they get back to Bethlehem. Look at verse number 19. So they too went until they came to Bethlehem, and it came to pass that then they were come to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them, and they said, "Is this Naomi?" And I think about that. You think about Naomi returning after 10 years away. Now, let's just say you left. You left this area, and then you came back 10 years later. How would you like that question? Now, we have, you know, Martinez, is it like next week? Or this week, right?
Saturday.
Yeah, this Saturday. And the Nepperells are not far behind. If you showed up in 10 years, and I would be like, "Is that Mrs. Martinez? Is that Mrs. Nepperella?" That would not be a nice question. Like, did she change that much in physical appearance that they had to question who she was? I mean, did the toils of life take that much toll on her? We know what happens under stressful situations. Your face changes, your hair color changes, and the questions I don't see here that I believe were asked: where's Elimelech? Where's Mahlon? Where's Chilion? Why is she alone? What's going on here? Is that her? A lot of questions going on. If you were coming back and those fingers were being pointed, and those questions were being asked, that's not open arms. "Hey, it's good to see you back." That's not the attitude that we see here. It's questions. Verse number 20, "And she said unto them, Call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me." Boy, she returns, and let's see, a couple things about Naomi and returning in her bitterness. She has, a couple things about that, she has become a victim of someone else's bad choice. Somebody else made a choice, and she became a victim of that. Boy, I don't know the discussion that happened with her and Elimelech, but, man, she became a victim of that. And then she suffered a series of successive losses. I did a message on a Wednesday night a couple years ago and talked about bitterness. I just pulled a few of those points into here because this is important. Bitterness is one of those seeds and really that always germinates. Always germinates. You need to be very careful. If you're not dealing with bitterness, I can guarantee you know somebody who is. It's there, and it is difficult thing to get over. Bitterness is one of those things. When it becomes your identity, it becomes your lens. When you become bitterness, when you become bitter, you look through a lens and you see everything that you want to be bitter at. You get bitter at a lot of things out there. It is something very detrimental. We need to be very careful about it. And this is a great lesson, because Ruth is not that long of a book. It's just 4 chapters long, and Naomi's in a bad way here in the first couple, and then we see her completely change. We see a completely different Naomi at the end of the book. And what did God do in her life to take her from that bitterness to one who was Naomi again, the Naomi of old, the pleasant one, the one that is helpful. So, she suffered a series of successive losses. She lost her husband, she lost her sons, she's in a strange land. And I bet she tried to make the best of the situation. Sometimes it's that straw that breaks the camel's back. Just that one more little thing that breaks the camel's back. You know, erosions can do what an explosion could never do. Some people just, you know, sometimes there's just an explosion that happens in your life. And you're like, wow, how did that person make it through that? That big, big thing that happened in their life. And you can deal with, sometimes there's just that support, people rally around you, hey, can I help you? But sometimes it's just that erosion in your life, just that day-to-day thing that you're dealing with, and it just wears at you. And it can do things that those explosions could never do. Be very careful of that. So she was a victim of someone else's bad choices. She suffered a series of successive losses. She was separated from a covenant community. Hey, there was no synagogue over in Moab where she could come and be with other people and just get the encouragement and the help that she needed. And you know what the devil loves to do? He loves to sift and separate. Sift and separate. Hey, let me just take so much away from you and then set you aside. That's so dangerous. The devil just gets in there. So, as we saw, she doesn't want her to be called Naomi anymore. Mara is what she wants to be called. Mara, it's used to describe a bitter stomach. Like, my stomach, I'm just bitter inside. It's used to describe a feeling of discomfort when someone dies. In Exodus 15:23, remember that when the children of Israel are coming out and they're drinking the water, and the water was bitter. They called the place Mara. Remember, Moses cut down the tree, threw it in, and then made the water sweet again. But Mara, bitterness. And she says, the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. The term for that Almighty, El Shaddai, that Shad in there, that means a woman nursing an infant child. You know, God's supposed to be taking care of me like an infant child, and he turned his back on me. He turned his back, and he's dealt very hard with me. look at verse 21. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Wow. After 10 years, she sees things a bit different. She sees, when I went out, I was full. I had everything when I went out. Why did you leave? Why did you leave if you went out? She should never. I had everything. When you go through a situation, it really helps you look at the perspective. Look at everything I had. Why was I so caught up in myself? Why was I so concerned about the economic situation? God, you could have taken care of everything. I had everything before. You provided for me, but now I have nothing. You know, he hath brought me home again empty. Now, was she empty when she came back? Could you imagine Ruth standing right there? She's like, I came back empty. Like, you know, Ruth's standing over there, you know, what am I, chopped liver? You know, sign on it. But she, like, hey, what, you know, but everything God had taken from her. Just a bitter, bitter person that she had become. But thankfully, God gave Naomi a special person in Ruth. God gave her a godly, sincere, selfless, persistent person to help her through everything that she was going through. You know, we all need somebody like that in our life, a godly, sincere, selfless, persistent person to help us through situations. And Naomi was put through one big time. And what a lesson we can learn from her. In the end of verse 22, I'll just read it real quick. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. Boy. All right, we're through chapter 1, and I got about 15 minutes. Got to step on it here. Man, I thought this was going to go fast, and Yeah, why? Anyways, so in chapter number 2, I guess we'll have to summarize a little bit here. Look at verse number 3. So Ruth comes back, and she really has the attitude of servitude. I am here to serve Naomi. I am here. I'll be the stranger in the land. I'll be the one with the accent. I'll be the kind of the outcast. I am here to serve Naomi. We saw that back in like verse 16, 17. Verse number 3, and she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap, it's like she just happened upon, was to light upon the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. She just happened upon Boaz's field and came to reap there. Boy, what a coincidence. There's no coincidences with God. He knew exactly what was going on. She really got the only job as a stranger that she could have. In Leviticus 19 talks about when they're reaping in the field and how the landowners, leave the corners, let the stranger reap from that. And you think about what had just happened in Israel. I wonder how many of the landowners were obeying that. Hey, it's been tough for a while. We got to get caught up on some things. We can't let anything go to waste. Well, thankfully, Boaz wasn't one of those. He was one that obeyed the law of God and doing everything God told him to do. And then Boaz comes out. I like in verse number 4, Boaz says, he meets his workers and he says, "The Lord be with you." Could you imagine having a job and that's how your boss greets you? "The Lord be with you." And how do his men? And they answered, "The Lord bless thee." Wow, what a great, this is a good guy. Good guy. He's the guy with the white hat and the white vest, the good guy in the old black and white cowboy movie. All right, I guess we'll move on. Verse number 4, or verse 5. Then said Boaz unto his servant, "What said these over the reapers? Whose damsel is this?" He sees Ruth out there and he asks, "Who is that?" And then gets the whole story, gets told who she is, and Boaz goes out and talks with her. Verse number 11. And Boaz answered and said unto her, "It hath fully been showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore." Hey, Boaz knew her story. The word got around. Ruth's reputation preceded her. Before she ever talked to Boaz, he knew about her and what she had done. And she had a great reputation. In verse number 7, talking with the reapers, and it says that she tarried a little in the house. She's been out there working hard. She just came in for a little break, and she's been out there working really hard. And Boaz sees that, and he provides really three things for Ruth. He provides food, he provides water, and he provides protection. Three things that he promises her, and he encourages her to come and work in his field. And he tells the other workers, leave her alone. Because you think about a woman out in the field, all by her, I don't know how many other people are around there. That can be a dangerous situation, especially for somebody, a stranger. How are these men going to treat you? Not all of the Israelites are honoring, glorifying God with their actions. But Ruth is there to serve Naomi, and she did that which was right. In verse number 16, I'm so thankful for verses like this, where Boaz tells his men, "And let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not." He tells some of his workers, "Hey, let some fall out." And I remember Mr. Parrott was doing that study in here about studying your Bible. I remember he talked about the word corn. Anybody remember that? And you find that in here. And he talks about corn, talks about wheat, and it's all the corn. Don't think of corn like our corn. It's kind of the wheat and the barley and all that. So just she's harvesting from the field, and they say just let some handfuls of purpose, on purpose, fall out and let her gather them together. And look how much she gathers in verse number 7, the end of verse 17, and it was about an ephah of barley. You know how much an ephah is? It's about 10 days worth of food. 10 days. It's about like a bushel basket, about six gallons or so. Weighs about 30 pounds. You think about, Ruth carrying a 30 pounds worth of food around. She's working hard. It's not, yesterday was a beautiful day. I think it was like 69. And it was nice breeze, nice sun. I'm like, that was nice, I don't think it was 69 over there. It was hot. It was dry. And she is working hard for what she needs to do. So Ruth comes home, Naomi sees this, and already you can kind of see Naomi's change. Verse number 20, and Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord. Wow, what did you say, Mrs. Bitter? What did you say? Blessed be he of the Lord. Already, she's finding out how God is provided. And she knows that Boaz controls that field, and she's like, wow. And she remembers the law of the kinsman redeemer. And she's like, hey, this applies to our situation. I like verse number 23. It just shows, let's read 23. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. When I had this in my mind, I had it like Ruth went out, she, you know, harvested, you know, talked with Boaz, came back. Then the next day, she went out and, no, it was the whole harvest period. As we saw in the end of verse number 1, it was the beginning of the barley harvest. And now, verse 23, it's the end of the barley harvest. So she labored through the whole harvest time. I don't know how long that was. I can probably say it was more than, you know, a couple of days. Maybe a week, maybe, who knows how long it was. But it was difficult work, and she worked hard through it. So, Naomi describes to Ruth the situation of the kinsman redeemer. Hey, and really how God wanted things to work. You couldn't really buy and sell land like we can here in a capitalist environment where you can buy land and you can, you know, be a lord over a land or a landlord, you know, as the term has come about. Over there, you could acquire some land, but then at the year of Jubilee, every 50 years, that land goes back to that family. So God wanted to keep all that land within that tribe, So it would all go back. But with the law of the kinsman redeemer, you could redeem, like if somebody died or if the land went into hock, you could redeem that out of for them before the year of Jubilee. so that I put it on the sheet there. That's in the book of Numbers, has a good description about that. So about like every 50 years. But the kinsman redeemer, he could redeem the land and the wife, and so that then he would raise up the children. He would marry that woman and raise up the children, but then the land would belong to the children. So that would stay in the line of the father. So that's what that was God's plan. What a great example. Redeeming the lost. Redeeming the lost. What a great example. There's Jesus Christ right in the story again, redeeming the lost in the kinsman redeemer. So really in chapter number 3, Naomi tells Ruth to, you know, watch Boaz as he's harvesting, and then when he's going to eat, he's going to work, he's going to eat, he's going to drink, he's going to lay himself down to sleep, and when he does, go lay yourself, you know, at his feet, and when he wakes up, ask him to marry you. You know, ask him to do the part of the kinsman redeemer. And that sounds like a crazy thing, but it's right there. You can read it. You know, that's God's plan. And I don't know if the crazier thing is, she does it. And she lays down at his feet. She uncovers his feet. Maybe that's to help him wake up. You know, who wouldn't wake up? Oh, my feet are cold. And then he like, and it kind of scares him. Like, what's going on over there? And what does Ruth say in verse number 9 of chapter 3? Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. Basically, will you marry me? Will you do the part of the kinsman redeemer? And then Boaz says some very nice things to her in verse number 10. He says, you could have had anybody. You could have had a young man, you could rich or poor. This leads me to believe that Ruth was a very attractive woman. She could have had anybody. And it seems like there's a bit of an age difference between Ruth and Boaz. And then in verse 11 at the end, he calls her, for thou art a virtuous woman. A virtuous woman. And you could just see that throughout this book. And you know, if reflecting on Proverbs 31, just all the characteristics of Ruth, what a great woman she was. But in verse number 12, he says, but there's a nearer kinsman than me. You know, I want to do it. I want to, but there's somebody else. There's somebody else. So they both lay down to rest that night. I wonder if they slept at all after that. Probably not. They wake up before anybody else really does, and Boaz gives Ruth like 6 measures of barley and sends her home. You know, he's not dumb. You know, he sends her off with a gift, sends her back, and Ruth tells Naomi, you know, hey, how'd it go? You know, and what'd she say? There's somebody else. You know, as women hate, anybody hates. But really, tomorrow she'll be married to either Boaz or the other kinsman, or the other guy. You know, like, ugh, what an uncomfortable situation. But she just has to wait. So Boaz goes in into the city the next day, and he waits, you know, by the business area. He gets 10 of the leaders, the elders, together, and then he sees that other kinsman come out, and he says, ho, such and one. I like that phrase. And then he says, he explains to him the situation. Hey, remember Elimelech and everything that happened? Well, would you like, in verse number 4, he says, would you like to redeem that land? And what does he say at the end? I will redeem it. And Boaz, oh, that's not what I wanted him to say. I kind of wanted him to say no. So then he gives him the whole picture, and he tells him about Ruth. And he says, well, if you can take the land, but you also got to take the wife, the Moabitess. And what does the man say at the end of verse number 6? For I cannot redeem it. He can't do what's right. You know, he doesn't want to mar his inheritance. Boy, because he doesn't want to do what's right because it will cost him. Because it will cost him something. He'll take this Moabitess into his family. But that, there's a lesson. I don't want to do what's right because it'll cost me something. So he does not do it. So Boaz is able to take Ruth and to be her husband. And that's kind of a bit of the rest of the chapter. But just think about, you know, remember Ruth, Naomi's solution way back in chapter 1 to Orpah and Ruth? She says, if I got married today and then had a child, and then, you know, you were to marry that child when it got old enough, that was her best solution, her best solution. In verse number 15, this is after Boaz and Ruth get married, and they have a son. Verse 15, and he shall be unto thee a restorer of life, and a nourisher of thine old age, for thy daughter-in-law, which is better, for thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than 7 sons hath borne him. Ruth is better to Naomi than 7 sons. 7 sons. Wow, what a blessing, what an amazing thing that is to say about somebody. Naomi's best thing was, hey, you got to wait like 20 years before I can help you. And what does Ruth end up being? Better to her than 7 sons. How that got turned around. And there's one lesson you could learn here. In verse number 17, and the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. Don't let the neighbors name your kid. Because they'll give him a name like Obed. That's an interesting, not that that's the strangest name in the Bible, but that's what it seems like. The neighbor ladies named this boy. And he is the father of Jesse, the father of David. What an amazing story. What an amazing story. How God is working in the heart of a Gentile girl, way on the other side of the river, of the other side of the Dead Sea, and how God could use her and bring her in and be in the line of David. You know, she becomes, it's here in the next couple of verses, but, you know, Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David in verse number 22. You know, right, the King David comes right from her. And I wonder, because if you look back in Matthew chapter 1, verse number 5, you know who else is in the line of Boaz? You know, this is, you know, a few generations back, Rahab. Rahab is in the line of Boaz. I wonder if Boaz had a heart for the down and outer, like for what God provided for his, you know, great-grandmother, however far I went back. You think about how far back that was. The book of Judges was 332 years. We're in there somewhere. The book of Joshua was about 32 years. So, you know, maybe 200 years or so back. But, you know, people lived a bit longer then, but hey, great-grandma, you know, God took care of her. And here's my situation. Here's a Moabitess that needs some help, and I can be a help to her. Boy, we just look at the book of Ruth, chapters 1 through 2, you know, through Naomi. You know, that's my past. I'm bitter. I'm bitter for everything God took my... He allowed me to move to a strange land. He took my husband. He took my sons. If only I would have stayed, maybe this never would have happened. And then chapters 3 through 4, that's my future. It's all about the people I serve. First it was, you know, Ruth serving Naomi, and now it's Naomi really helping Ruth, you know, raising this boy. And everything that Naomi has completely changed. She's not the bitter one anymore. She's the pleasant one again. Naomi learned God wasn't doing something to me. He was doing something for me. Because sometimes it's like, God, what are you doing to me? Why are you doing this? Why? I'm going through all this trouble. But maybe God is just doing something for you. And you just focus on the small thing at the time. You know, let God take his course, but stay in his will during the time. And then you'll see at the end, wow, that's what you were doing? That's what you were doing? This just popped in. Remember that footprints in the sand? Everybody see that? And there's the footprints going in the sand, and there's two sets of prints, and then there's only one set of prints for a while, and then there's two again. And the person looking at it says, see, right where there was just one set of footprints, that was the hard time. Where were you, God? That was really hard right there. Why weren't you there by me? And God says, those were my footprints, and I was carrying you through that situation. I could just imagine Naomi being carried through that situation. But thankfully, she got a little sideways. She got bitter from some of the things, but she stayed where she did what she needed to do, and she got back to God. God showed his whole plan. Hey, I'm doing something for you. Don't quit on him, because he loves us so much, and he wants us to help us in every way that he can. Do we let him? Do we let him? Or do we turn our back and go through that cycle in the book of Judges? So hopefully that was a blessing to you this morning. I thoroughly enjoy this book. This is a really good book. I can definitely see how it's Mr. Naparella's favorite. So next week we'll move on to Samuel, some more exciting history things. So encourage you to please come back or, read ahead. I always encourage that. So, all right, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for this morning. Lord, thank you for your word. Thank you for the goodness of it. Thank you for how you take care of us and in spite of the mistakes that we make. Lord, thank you for the great examples here in the book of Ruth. Thank you for teaching us how to overcome bitterness. Lord, it's such a difficult thing to overcome. Lord, it's so, it's everywhere. Lord, and help us not to get caught up in it. Please bless the remainder of the service, Lord, that it would only honor and glorify you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.